Picture this. It is late at night, and you are sitting at your kitchen table.
Oh, I know that scene all too well.
Right. You are just staring at this massive stack of confusing medical papers. And the word dementia or, Alzheimer's is basically just echoing in the room.
It is terrifying. It really is.
It is. You have never had to navigate this system before, and you are just wondering what on earth to do next. So, welcome to this deep dive.
We are so glad you are here.
We really are. As your editors from the California Care Compass, our mission today is very specific.
Yes, we want to talk directly to those California families who are, well, staring at that stack of papers for the very first time.
Exactly. We're going to establish a calm, direct, and just really practical path forward for when dementia actually comes home.
Because getting this diagnosis, it is kind of like finding one of those you are here markers on a really confusing map.
Oh, that is a great analogy. It is scary to see where you are.
Right, but it is the starting point you absolutely need to finally get your bearings. But to read this new map properly, we first need to understand the actual landscape of this diagnosis.
Definitely. Because families naturally view dementia as this strictly medical event, right? They brace themselves for all the doctor visits and the complex medication schedules.
Which makes sense,
Yeah.
but the reality on the ground is just far more complicated than that. Dementia care is primarily a legal and logistical crisis. It just happens to be wearing a medical disguise.
That is such a fundamental shift in perspective, a legal and logistical crisis.
Yes, because the medical system, they diagnose the condition, but the legal and financial systems are what actually dictate how you are allowed to manage it.
Wow. Okay, so let's start with that medical disguise itself. A doctor says the word dementia.
And everyone panics.
Right. Most people immediately jump to Alzheimer's disease and just assume, the memory is fading. But what is actually happening under that umbrella term?
Well, that is the key. Dementia is an umbrella term. It describes a set of symptoms, not a single disease.
Okay, so what falls under that umbrella?
Physically, we are talking about permanent structural damage to the brain. So with Alzheimer's, you have proteins misfolding and clumping together.
Literally blocking the communication between neurons, right?
Exactly. But then with vascular dementia, tiny blood vessels in the brain are actually blocked or bleeding. That deprives the tissue of oxygen.
And there is Lewy body and frontotemporal dementia, too.
Right. The overarching result of all of them is a severe decline in cognitive function that disrupts daily life. The brain is literally losing its physical ability to process the present moment.
But I see so many families get totally bogged down in finding the exact subtype on day one.
Oh, constantly.
They insist on endless testing to determine if it is Lewy body or frontotemporal. Is that pursuit of diagnostic perfection actually useful for a family just trying to survive the first month?
Honestly, it often serves as a massive distraction. I mean, the specific subtype will dictate certain medication choices down the line.
Sure, that makes medical sense.
But on day one, the subtype matters much less than the reality of the functional decline. The diagnosis is not a label to fear. It is simply a tool.
A tool to kind of name the enemy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is the key that unlocks a new understanding of the behaviors you have been seeing, the unexpected aggression, the confusion in familiar places.
Or the sudden inability to balance a checkbook.
Right. Those things finally have a biological explanation. The essence of the person you love is still there. This tool just helps you build a bridge to them.
It provides a mechanism for the madness. But practically speaking, this new tool means you are suddenly managing a really sprawling medical roster.
Oh, you really are. It is overwhelming.
You have the primary care physician, the neurologist, and maybe a geriatrician. And the friction of interdepartmental communication in modern healthcare is just legendary.
Legendary is a polite word for it. You essentially become a medical project manager overnight.
Right. You are coordinating care between offices that often just do not talk to each other at all.
You absolutely do, which means you must centralize the data yourself. You need a physical binder or a highly secure digital folder.
So every single appointment note, every blood test.
Yes. Every medication adjustment must be tracked by you. Do not rely on patient portals to seamlessly share information between competing hospital networks.
Because they just will not.
They will not. You are the sole repository of your parents' medical truth now.
Which brings us directly to the core problem. You cannot execute the logistics of being a medical project manager without the actual legal authority to act.
No, you cannot. And this is a huge stumbling block.
I really want to challenge a very common assumption here. A lot of families hear a dementia diagnosis and just assume control will naturally default to the next of kin.
Oh, I hear that every single day.
Right. They figure a spouse, or an adult child automatically gets to make the calls in a crisis.
That is easily the most dangerous myth in elder care today.
Wait, really? The most dangerous?
Yes. The legal and financial systems operate entirely on explicit, documented authorization. They honestly do not care about your family tree or your good intentions.
Because hospitals face massive liability under federal privacy laws, right?
Exactly. And banks are utterly terrified of elder financial abuse regulations. Without formal, legally binding documentation, institutions will just freeze you out to protect themselves.
Wow. And this ties back to that hidden ticking clock we mentioned. We are talking about the window of legal capacity.
Yes, the window of capacity. It is critical.
How is legal capacity actually measured in the real world? Like, is there a standardized blood test or a brain scan for it?
Not at all. Legal capacity is a purely functional assessment. It is not about whether your parent remembers the current year or what they ate for breakfast.
Okay, so what is it about?
It is about their ability to understand the specific consequences of a decision at the exact moment that decision is made.
Oh, I see.
Like, can they comprehend that signing a specific document grants you total control over their real estate? That window of comprehension fluctuates wildly with dementia.
And eventually, it closes permanently. So what specific documents must be signed before that window slams shut?
You need two very distinct documents. The first is an advance healthcare directive.
Okay, and what does that do?
This allows your parent to name you as their agent for all healthcare decisions if they lose the ability to communicate.
Got it. And the second one?
The second is a durable power of attorney for finances. This grants you the actual authority to access bank accounts, pay the mortgage, and handle property.
Let us play out the worst case scenario. The window of capacity closes. The documents were just never signed.
It happens all the time.
And now the parent needs to be moved to a secure memory care facility, but the family cannot legally access the parent's funds to pay for the bed. What happens then?
You are forced right into the court system to seek a conservatorship.
Oh no, that sounds terrible.
It is. You must hire an attorney and formally petition a judge to literally strip your parent of their civil rights.
And it is not private, is it?
Not at all. The court appoints an independent investigator to interview your parent. Your parent might even be assigned their own court-appointed attorney to fight your petition.
So it is adversarial.
Highly adversarial. It is public, it takes months to resolve, and it drains the very financial assets you are actually trying to protect.
Which is why getting those two documents signed privately is the single greatest gift a parent can give their family.
Exactly. Plus, families really must have an open conversation right now about who the primary caregiver will actually be. You have to prevent resentment later.
Absolutely. So, okay, once you secure the legal authority to protect your parent, you have to apply that authority to their physical environment.
Right, to the place they spend the most time, their own house.
A house they have navigated safely for 30 years suddenly becomes this landscape of invisible hazards.
This is where we have to look at how the physical mechanisms of dementia alter sensory perception. The brain literally changes how it interprets visual and spatial data.
Can you give us an example? Like, what does that look like in a normal living room?
Let us look at a simple throw rug in the hallway. A person with a healthy brain sees a dark rug on a light wooden floor and knows, okay, it is a rug.
Right, just a piece of fabric.
But a brain damaged by dementia might process that dark shape as a deep hole or a sudden drop-off in the floor.
Oh, wow. So they react to a hole that is not there.
Yes. They will attempt to step over the perceived hole. They lose their balance and they suffer a catastrophic fall. Throw rugs simply must go.
So you are not just removing a tripping hazard. You are modifying the environment to accommodate a broken visual processing system.
Precisely. Hallways need bright night lights to help with those shadows, and all cleaning supplies and chemicals must be totally locked up.
The kitchen and the bathroom seem like the most obvious danger zones for these types of sensory failures.
Oh, they are. The bathroom requires immediate structural intervention. Fall prevention is your primary metric for success here.
So what are the actual hardware requirements?
You must install grab bars anchored directly into the wall studs, both inside the shower and next to the toilet. Non-slip mats and a sturdy shower chair are absolutely required hardware.
And the kitchen.
In the kitchen, the executive functioning required to cook just degrades. A person might turn on a gas burner, walk away, and completely forget the entire concept of fire.
That is terrifying.
It is. You must invest in automatic stove shutoff devices, and medications must be locked up entirely with you taking over the dispensing.
We also need to talk about wandering. Because that is a terrifying concept for families. You hear these stories on the local news about search parties.
It was a massive fear.
What is the mechanism behind wandering, and how do you secure a house against it?
Well, wandering is rarely just aimless pacing. It is usually goal-directed behavior driven by a fractured mental map.
Like they're trying to go somewhere specific.
Exactly. Your parent might be trying to go to a job they retired from 2 decades ago, or searching for a childhood home that just no longer exists.
Their brain provides the motivation to leave, but it cannot provide the navigation to return.
That is exactly it. So your first line of defense is a medical alert bracelet with your contact information. Next, install simple door charms that alert you whenever an exterior door opens.
What about the community?
Notify your trusted neighbors, give them your phone number, and ask them to call you immediately if they ever see your parent walking alone.
Okay, so we are securing the physical house, but we really have to address the car parked in the driveway.
Ah, the driving conversation, the most emotional hurdle.
It is. Taking the keys away is often treated like a running joke in pop culture. But in reality, it feels like a devastating loss of independence.
It does.
It is like taking a teenager's freedom away, but in reverse. It feels like a betrayal. How can a family frame this without sounding like a dictator?
Well, first, remember that the physical reaction times and the judgment required to navigate traffic degrade rapidly. You simply cannot negotiate with a progressive brain disease.
True. But you do not have to be the villain in this dynamic, do you?
No, you do not. Frame the decision purely around safety and the doctor's authority. In California, the state apparatus can actually take the blame.
Explain how that works. How does the family use the state as a shield?
Well, California law requires doctors to report patients diagnosed with conditions that cause severe cognitive decline directly to the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Oh, really? It is mandatory.
Yes. So you talk to the neurologist, you ensure they submit that confidential report to the DMV, and write a formal letter stating your parent can no longer drive. Families can make confidential reports, too.
So rely on the doctor's letter.
Exactly. Then the family can sit beside the parent, sympathize with their anger, and blame the strict medical requirements. The blame falls on the state, not you.
That is a brilliant logistical maneuver. But, you know, all of this logistics, making the home safe and providing full-time care, it requires immense funding.
Massive funding.
Families immediately look at this situation and assume they are going to go completely bankrupt. They look to Medicare, assuming it covers elder care. Let us correct the record on Medicare versus Medi-Cal care.
This is the biggest misconception in elder care. We need to think of Medicare like collision insurance for a vehicle.
Collision insurance, okay.
Yes. Medicare is federal health insurance managed by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS. It covers the major acute accidents.
So it pays for the hospital stay if your parent falls and breaks a hip.
Right. It pays for the surgical intervention and the subsequent physical therapy.
But it does not pay for the daily maintenance. It will not pay for someone to come to the house and help your parent safely take a shower or eat a meal.
Exactly. Medicare does not cover long-term custodial care. For the daily wear and tear of a chronic condition, you need the warranty.
And in California, that warranty is Medi-Cal.
Yes. Medi-Cal is the master key that unlocks long-term care assistance in the state.
But families often think Medi-Cal is only for people living in absolute poverty. They assume a parent with a modest pension is just automatically disqualified.
Which leads them to needlessly drain their life savings paying out of pocket.
Right.
That assumption destroys generational wealth. The financial eligibility rules for long-term care are actually much more flexible than for general health coverage.
Wait, really? How so?
California has taken massive steps to eliminate asset limits from medical programs. A parent can own their primary residence, have retirement accounts and payout status, and still qualify for the programs that pay for daily care.
Because the state evaluates the stream of income, not the total sum of a lifetime of savings.
Exactly. Do not assume you will not qualify.
So assuming a family secures that master key, what specific doors does medical actually open? Let us get into the weeds on in-home supportive services.
Sure. In-home supportive services, or IHSS, is administered by the California Department of Social Services.
And run locally, right?
Yes. A county social worker comes to the home and conducts a functional assessment. They calculate the exact number of hours your parent needs for basic safety, from meal preparation to bathing.
Okay.
The program then pays a caregiver an hourly wage to provide those specific hours of support.
The truly fascinating part of IHSS is who can be hired as that caregiver. Adult children can often be formally hired to care for their own parents.
It is an incredible financial lifeline.
But I want to push back on this a little. The reality of quitting a career to live off state caregiver wages seems mathematically impossible for most families facing the cost of living in California.
Well, it is not designed to replace a lucrative corporate salary. IHSS is a lifeline meant to prevent utter financial collapse.
So it is for when someone is already forced out of work.
Exactly. For a family where one partner has already been forced to drop down to part-time work to manage care, that state income stream is often the difference between keeping the family home and losing it to foreclosure.
It stabilizes the immediate crisis. But what happens when the family caregiver simply must leave the house to maintain their primary employment?
That is where community-based adult services comes in. This program is overseen by the California Department of Aging, or CDA.
This is adult daycare, right?
Yes, but it provides a highly structured daytime environment. We are not talking about a recreation room with a television.
Right, they need actual care.
Exactly. These centers provide meals, physical therapists working on fall prevention, and a completely safe environment. It provides the intense oversight necessary for the family to safely leave for an 8-hour workday.
And if the home environment completely fails, if the parent requires awake supervision through the night and the family just can no longer provide it safely.
Then you look toward the assisted living waiver. This program is managed by the California Department of Healthcare Services, or DHCS.
Okay, what does that waiver do?
It is a medical program designed to help pay the exorbitant facility costs of assisted living or memory care. But the critical logistical detail here is the wait list.
Oh.
The demand vastly exceeds the supply. Families must apply for this waiver years before they actually hit the crisis point of needing a facility.
Wow. Navigating all these acronyms, you know, CMS, CDSS, CDA, DHCS, while simultaneously providing daily physical care, I mean, that is a recipe for total systemic collapse for the caregiver.
It completely drains a person.
And we often treat caregiver burnout like it is a character flaw or just a simple lack of endurance.
But burnout is a measurable physiological condition. Finding support for yourself is a requirement, not a luxury. You simply cannot pour from an empty cup.
It is like that classic airplane safety rule, right? Put in your own oxygen mask on first. Taking a break feels guilty, but it is a strategic necessity.
Exactly. When you are managing dementia care, you are existing in a constant state of hypervigilance.
Always waiting for a stove to be left on or a front door to open.
Right. And that relentless hypervigilance floods the caregiver's body with cortisol. Chronic cortisol exposure degrades your immune system. It shatters your sleep architecture, and it severely impairs your own cognitive function.
So you are not just tired. Your body is suffering from sustained biochemical toxicity.
Yes. So where does a family find support? Organizations like the Alzheimer's Association offer a 24/7 helpline.
And the Family Caregiver Alliance provides advocacy and services too.
Right. But your most efficient local starting point is your county's Area Agency on Aging.
Okay. The local hub.
Yes. These agencies are overseen by the California Department of Aging, and every single county operates one. They are the central command hub for all local senior services.
That is incredibly helpful.
They know the hidden grants and the support groups. They are the fast track to finding respite care. Using IHSS hours to hire a backup caregiver gives you the breathing room needed to survive this marathon.
We have covered a tremendous amount of logistical ground today, from the pathology of the disease to the legal clock and the whole labyrinth of state programs.
It is a lot to process.
It is. So, as your editors, we want to distill this down to the immediate next steps. What are the concrete actions you need to take this week based on the California Care Compass guidelines?
I love a good action plan.
Here is a 4-step action plan.
Sure.
Step 1, schedule a formal family meeting. Put it on the calendar right now to discuss caregiving roles and the legal documents.
Absolutely essential.
Step 2, find or draft the Advanced Healthcare Directive and the Durable Power of Attorney for Finances. The window of capacity is closing, and you just cannot afford a conservatorship.
Right. Do not wait on that.
Step 3, conduct a home safety check. Remove the throw rugs and lock up the cleaning chemicals tonight to accommodate those changes in spatial awareness.
Throw rugs must go today.
And step 4, find the phone number for your local area agency on aging and stick it right on your refrigerator.
That is the perfect operational checklist. Listen, the California care system is undoubtedly complex and it is incredibly fragmented, but it is not impossible.
No, it is not.
Act now while the window of capacity is open. You are not building a support system entirely from scratch. You just need to systematically tap into the massive infrastructure that already exists around you.
That is such a comforting thought. You might be staring at that stack of medical papers, feeling entirely alone in this process. But you are not alone.
You really are not.
And here is a final provocative thought to mull over as you start making these difficult decisions. We spend so much time trying to anchor people with dementia to our shared reality, right?
We do. It is our instinct.
But as the disease progresses and their mental map fractures, we run into the ethical dilemma of therapeutic fibbing.
Oh, that is a tough one.
It is. If taking over their care shifts the entire power dynamic of your relationship, how do you preserve your role as their child while acting as their protector? Like if your parent frantically asks when their spouse is coming home, and that spouse passed away 10 years ago, do you force them to repeatedly relive the raw grief of that death by telling them the truth?
It is heart-wrenching.
Or do you lie, tell them that the spouse is simply running an errand at the grocery store, and allow them to remain at peace in their own reality? We will leave you to think about that.
It is a profound question.
Thank you for joining us at the kitchen table today. Make sure to return for our next deep dive, where we will tackle the next massive logistical hurdle. What to actually do when a parent can no longer safely live at home. Until then, take a deep breath and take that first step.